Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Who have we got coming round for lunch today?
I've got a really interesting broadcaster coming round today. Her name's Makita Oliver.
All right, okay.
So today, this is really fun, today is a Mother's Day special. So we thought about it and we just thought, you know who we really want to talk to about this? Is each other. I want to talk to her about what it's like being mothered by me. And she can talk to me about what it's like being daughtered by her. It's kind of interesting, you know, like, we just had this big holiday together, and we did very well. We only had 2 fights the whole time, which is pretty good. It's a pretty good, like, you know, ratio. But she keeps saying to people, "Oh, do you think you could stand being with your parents for a month?" I'm like, maybe they couldn't. Their parents couldn't stand being with their kids for a month. It works both ways.
What kind of meal are you making for your daughter?
This is one of the staple things I used to make when Makita was little, when we didn't have any money. And also, it's delicious anyway, P.S. Today, I'm the guest on Stirring It Up. I'm going to my parents' house. Mum's cooking me my favourite meal. And I suddenly feel like a guest just because I'm arriving. I'm on the other side of the door. Suddenly I am in guest mode.
How do you feel about the setup today? Are you nervous at all?
No, I'm not nervous, but I think whenever Mum and I sit down and talk about our history and our past, I just get very emotional. And I think she sometimes gets to be like, oh God, keep your shit together. So today I would like to see how emotional I can make her feel. I'm always trying to basically make my mum cry and feel. And so today, we'll see. Let's go see Mummy and Nanny and Scouty. Oh my God, I'm the guest. Makita actually ringing the doorbell.
Hello!
Can't believe you actually rang the doorbell.
You're such a
dog. Oh, it's so nice to be here.
Welcome to my home.
This is what it feels like to be a guest on Stirring It Up.
Yeah, welcome to our podcast. Welcome to Stirring It Up. Thank you, Oliver. We've been so excited to have you here.
You're such a broadcaster of note. Love that. Am I here as a broadcaster of note,
you're
stroke daughter?
Broadcaster of note, stroke kid.
Okay. Oh, it smells great, guys.
Yeah.
Oh my
I've
God.
I've made all the shit.
I see mashed potato.
I've made all the shit.
Where shall I sit?
You sit in the guest's chair.
Where's the drink?
I've got a bottle of champagne.
Oh, yay! Okay, so there were obviously, if we're going to make my favourite meal from childhood, there are a few things it could be.
I settled on one because I feel like I almost made this and honey-baked chicken the equal amount of times.
Yes, but my 3 favourites would be bangers and mash, meatloaf and mashed potato, shepherd's pie.
Shall I get the food?
Yeah, I'd love to just see it, Mummy. And so I see champagne on the table, which means, of course, you brought all your little extras.
All the little extras.
My mum cannot just have a glass of champagne. It has to have some sort of syrup in it, some sort of flour. It is meatloaf and mashed potatoes.
Potatoes. Should I bring it down there? There's the mashed potato. Look, with pools of butter. And very importantly, peas. And what's that?
Mushroom gravy.
Mushroom gravy.
Mushroom gravy.
The right kind, made with milk.
Mommy.
This literally is one of your favourite ever things to eat in the whole world, isn't it?
You haven't made this for me in so long. It's been about 20 years.
It's been a while.
Thank you. Thank you, Mum.
Would you like to help yourself, please, guest?
No, you do it.
So today, we are doing a Mother's Day special.
It is Mother's Day, and we wanted to talk about our relationship. I think we get interviewed a lot together. We work together, Mum.
Yeah.
And we have an extremely codependent, intertwined, intertangled relationship full of love and many other things. But there are things that I still haven't asked you ever.
Are there?
Yeah. Oh, loads of things.
Kaya said to me, you're a bit nervous. And I think I'm a little bit.
I wasn't very good on Mother's Day.
What, when you were little?
No.
No, you were rubbish.
It wasn't brought to my attention enough.
Well, no, you just were very, you thought I was quite embarrassing.
Oh.
Didn't you?
Your little face. There were just so many things that I wanted when I was a kid that, you know what I'm like, if I make a decision about what's going to make me happy and what's right for me, then I find it really hard to ever let go. And I don't know what day it was or what year, but I just decided that a lot of what we had wasn't what was right for me.
And who we were.
And who we were. Poor, you're black, poor, single parent family.
Didn't fit a picture that you had in your head.
Yeah, you were also quite loud. I was like,
you were very like,
always, just always got so much to say. But of course, you get older and it's like, oh my God, I wouldn't have changed a thing. And not just that, it's just that every single part of where I come from has made me who I am, and I like who I am, and I love who we are.
Yeah.
And now I'm very proud of our story.
Mm.
I'm really proud of our story. I like to let people know that this has all been quite a crazy journey for both of us.
Quite the journey.
Yeah.
This, see this tablecloth?
Yeah.
I chose this to put on the table because it reminded me of all the fabric that I used to put on the shitty sofas and stuff that we
had.
Oh
my God.
That you hated so much.
And see, again, isn't it? Everything's just a reaction to our childhood. I love sofas that are upholstered, if that makes sense, because my mum would just have old sofas. You'd have old sofas. And then
I don't think I ever bought one. Somebody would always just give me a sofa.
Right. And then that would be all right, but then you have to put fabric over them.
To
and
jazz it up.
But they would just always slip. Oh my God, it was so annoying. It'd be like, every hour or two, it'd be like, let's set the sofa again. And be like, why do we have to keep resetting it? But now I'm like, God, Powers Terrace, our first flat in Ladbroke Grove, West One Park that we lived in from the ages of me being 2, I think, to 14.
Just before you were 2, we moved there.
It was a great flat full of colour, textures, these big, beautiful rooms because it was a housing trust flat. Should we tell the story of how we got our first flat?
It's actually a really awful story because I was walking down the street with you.
We were living
in White City, which was not a very nice place to live. It was really rough. And they kind of, everybody there felt the same. They used it as a kind of dumping ground at the time. I always thought it was ironic. It was called White City and everybody there was black and brown.
Yeah, because you were at this time 20 with a newborn in an estate.
One day we were walking through past the shops by QPR football ground that you're stepdad likes to go to so much. It was a sunny day. I had a little short suit on. You were in the buggy. Some guy said something to me. I don't know, some cheeky thing. And we had a little flirty exchange, whatever. And there were these girls sitting on a wall. And one of them went, I don't know who she thinks she is. Something, something. And I looked at her and I said, I'll tell you what. And I pointed my finger. I said, why don't you mind your business and I'll mind mine. She said, take your finger out of my face, and jumped off the wall and attacked me. And because I was with you, I couldn't fight back because I had to protect you. So I just kind of covered you, and she just literally went to town on me, just a complete insane person.
And you had a newborn in your arms.
And I had a little, but no, you were in a buggy, okay. But you were about one, I think, something like that. It was really scary. And then she went off and then she came back and jumped on my back. It was just a horrible situation. Anyway, I managed to get home and then I called the housing people and said, you know, this terrible thing has happened. You've got to get me out of here. And I don't know how I managed it, but I managed to get the direct phone number of the dude who was head of housing at Shepherd's Bush in White City. And I used to ring him from the phone box. Remember, no mobiles.
Yeah, of course you didn't have a landline.
I didn't have a landline. I don't think we had a phone then. I used to ring him from the phone box every single day. Go, hello. And he was like, is that Miss Oliver? I'd be like, yep.
I think it's such a example of your defiance, your strength and your ingenuity. You were like, we're getting the fuck out of here. I don't care how. Give me my left hand.
Every single day. And in the end, he housed me just so that I would stop ringing him up.
So this is you at, if I'd just been born 20.
Yeah, 20.
So I found these pictures at the old flat the other day. And it's a period of time that I always want to ask you more about, which is the sort of 2-3 years before I was born in your late teens, where you'd like kind of escaped Suffolk.
Escaped and is the right word.
Look at this beautiful picture of my mum.
Where did you get these?
Look at that. This is mum in hair wrapped, African. Do you know where?
Like, I think that's Womad.
Yeah, I think it's mum.
Let me see it.
With her band Rip Ring and Panic, which is my mum and Nana Cherry, my auntie and my uncle Sean and my uncle Bruce. How old do you think you are in these pictures?
I'm like 18.
Right, so I want to talk about this girl.
Yeah.
Because this Andy has just left Suffolk. She's been running around the world now with Rip Ring and Panic in a band with her brother. She's found the love of her life, Nana Cherry. And this is these pictures are so beautiful, Ebony, because you can see Nana and my mum, the way they used to dance together. There was just this rhythm and this, look how alive everyone looks. It's just life. And everyone is so young. But what you don't know is that you're going to be a mum in 2 years.
Yeah, I think Nana's pregnant.
Oh, with Neymar. What were the kind of things you were thinking about at the time? Like, what was important to you? What were you thinking about what you wanted to do with your life?
I mean,
or who you were?
Cider. Quite important. Me and Nana, we never had any money ever. Bottle of Strongbow was 99p.
Wow.
So we used to beg people for a pound. Go on, Sean, please. Jerry, please. And Jerry, my cousin. We'd be like, if I give you a pound, will you stop making that annoying noise? And we'd be like, yeah, absolutely. And we were cooking all the time. Mm-hmm. We were cementing our family as it is now, really, back then. Even then, a lot of the people who were our dear friends then still are.
As family.
I think it was really important back then for us, for me and for Nana, to make a family unit. As we saw it, you know what I mean? We were cooking all the time. You know, we'd come back from the road, come up back from these tours and stuff, and then just start doing... But Nana, it was Nana that taught me how to make meatloaf.
Oh, my God! And what did your love life look like at this time?
My love life?
So you're 18, mm-hmm. you're out in the world, mm-hmm. you're not a virgin.
No, correct.
So, did you have, like, crushes on the road or... any boyfriends?
What was on your mind when you were 18?
Well, I was like 2 or 3 years into pop world. 18 was pretty good. 18's when I remember going to the Metropolitan Pub and I had just got my gold card.
Oh, God.
And I remember thinking, God, I guess I'm making really good money now. But I was never, it was weird because I never was that surprised that I was making money, but I still didn't think I deserved it.
Right.
Definitely didn't think I deserved it. That was the beginning of buying a lot of things for other people. And using that money that I was making to facilitate a lot of other people.
To keep them close to you?
I think there were elements of I can control things now. I can control the night. So 18, I was still living at Nana's, Auntie Nana's, because obviously I'd moved there when we'd lost everything.
When we moved to Hackney.
There wasn't really enough room. I had never heard of this place called Clapton.
Yeah, well, I mean, we would have given you the big bedroom. You were just like, I'm not... living in Clapton. It's just not happening. And I was like, well, I don't know what the hell we're going to do because we have to move to Clapton because this is where the flat is. And then Cameron,
my uncle Cameron, Nana's husband,
stepped into the ring and said, she can come live at ours.
The first day I got there, I was like, wow, I'm not going to have any privacy. I'm not going to have a room. And I was used to all those things because even though we had no money, whenever we were really hard up, you and Garfield would do things like your room became the cupboard in one of our flats and I had the only bedroom and the other bedroom was for a lodger. You and Garfield actually slept in a shoe cupboard. I can't believe it. But what a nice sitting room.
It was a great sitting room.
We spent a lot of time in there. And so I did feel just really displaced and like, where am I meant to be? Where is the space for me? What's happened to everything that I knew?
Mm.
But I knew you guys were trying, everyone was trying their best. I think that's probably one of the reasons I got Pop World, because everything had been disjointed. So opportunities didn't seem as terrifying.
Right.
Because of course, with school and stuff, I'd not been going for so long. So I was just like living in my own hell.
What did it
fear.
Feel like for you when that Pop World call came in, so to speak? Can you remember?
Yeah, like I was just like, yeah, it makes sense. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Of course I took an offer to show every single day and I'm 15.
Oh God, it's like, it's interesting because you know how much I believe in magic and everything now, but I was being prepared for it by being at home watching MTV. I was being prepared for it.
So we should say at this point that Makita, you've been having a really hard time at school, getting quite badly bullied. You felt you were in quite a terrible state of anxiety all the time. And I'd sort of taken you out of school almost completely.
Yeah, I wasn't in school for like a year.
I couldn't find... Every time I sent you to another school, there was another meltdown.
Yeah, we did. Really, I did try. I went to six different schools.
Went to six different schools, couldn't get anyone to work. And then Cameron said she'd come and live here. And he paid for you to go to this school in
Queensway. Your school life was so horrid.
Yeah.
And I imagine it was probably quite triggering for you that mine suddenly was turning out to be so problematic.
Well, it was quite upsetting because you had also had such a great primary school.
I know.
Fox. Ugh. Fox was the best school. It was just the most amazing place. It was like a dream to send your kids to Fox, you know. Little did we know that coming out of that was going to be... I mean, maybe it made it even more difficult, actually, the sort of transition, because we went to Spain for a year or whatever, to 9 months,
and then we came back. To live in Spain with Nana and Cameron and all the kids.
And we changed our minds and came back. You had never been so pleased. And then that's when it started to get difficult, right?
Well, it was basically in Spain, was hanging out with our American friends from New York, Willie and Cheyenne. Shout out to Willie and Cheyenne. And they liked Nirvana. And I was like, what is grunge? So I came back to school going, right, I'm a grunge person now, which meant Dr. Martens, plaits that I dyed purple with Kool-Aid, camo cargo pants. And I was like, I am going to be so popular. And obviously in Holland Park, I think there were 90 different languages spoken in Holland Park.
Right.
Predominantly is people from the ends at Holland Park. And being black or mixed race and being into a music that was seen as white music in 1997 was not acceptable.
So you were wrong about the cool part.
Yeah, totally wrong. I got spat on my first day and called a dirty hippie. And then, but it was an interesting period for me because it was like me, my cousin Phoebe, and like four little white girls who I sort of made my new grunge gang. And we sort of decided, like me and Phoebe were like, look, we're mixed race. We could wear bomber jackets and leather leggings and get some Reeboks and we could just assimilate. And we really were like, no, that's not who the fuck we are. I was like, I love Nirvana. I'm not giving them up. I really meant it. I mean, there's no coincidence that 3-4 years later, I get something like Pop World and it does well because I'm opponiated and I trust myself and I know what I want and what I don't want, what I like, what I don't like. So I think these are, for me, even it was a terrible time, these were the origins of me becoming the things I like about myself.
We have this conversation with other people quite a lot, though, that the things that you survive are the things that end up being your kind of backbone, your strength, your empathy, your superpowers.
Absolutely, Mum. And you've kind of articulated that a lot in the last few years. But really, it's not even about they give you these things. It's actually almost like you need to get as close to everything that's happened to you as you possibly can, because that's where all the lessons of the future are.
Yes.
What have I survived? Not just, I survived that, it gave me this. What was that? What exactly happened?
What
was my reaction to it? Why did I say that? And you know, fear stops us from looking at painful things. But if you can look at your ugly monsters, the ugly monsters from the past.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just,
it's all diminished.
Yeah, they're not so scary anymore. And actually, it's this joyful thing. It's like, oh yeah, Holland Park getting bullied. Best thing that ever happened to me. Thank God.
Because you do often say to me, like if you're having a shit time, like, where is the lesson in this? Mm-hmm. So are you always looking for that?
Now I am. Now that I'm 39.
My God, Makita, how did that happen?
My next...
next bag of tricks.
My next bag of tricks.
What have you got down there?
This is a picture of the day that I was born.
Look at that! Little bean!
So how are you feeling that day?
Oh my gosh, you're finally here.
Oh.
Look at my face. God, I remember that head size. So what a name. Little Bundy.
What do you mean by you're finally here? Because we did find something incredible, which is especially incredible for us because we've moved a lot and things get lost a lot
in this
family.
And I never took any pictures.
And Mum never took
any. Sorry, you can tell everybody.
She's terrible at taking pictures of my childhood.
Anything.
Yeah. There was something that we found when we were clearing out our storage space a few years ago, which really touched me and really got into my heart, which was your diary.
Oh my goodness, yeah. And it says, saw my baby for the first time today because I'd had a scan, right?
But it's like this big proper, you know, like old school book. And you really got it together to start writing it. You said, well, I was trying to get my shit together because I knew I was having a baby.
Yeah, it didn't last very long, did it? It was like 5 pages.
10. It's like 10. But it was very interesting to get into your head and hear a young girl, little girl, kind of the way her mind was working when she knew a baby was coming.
At the time, I was very young. But, you know, people have babies younger than that, obviously, all the time. But it was quite young. 20s, reasonably young. But I didn't think I was young. Both Nana and I felt like we were kind of grown, like grounded women's, do you know what I mean? And we used to read all these like Toni Morrison, Alice Walker, Nikki Giovanni, Bucci Amicheta, all these kind of really incredible women writers. Actually, James Baldwin was big in the game as well. You know, just a lot of books that had been written by people of colour. These worlds that we wanted to inhabit is somewhat. That's why we were always like, making these tableaus, like cooking this food and playing this music and trying to evoke, almost like call up the ancestors to create the village that we missed, that we felt somewhere was missing for us, you know? So we were constantly trying to build that world around ourselves. In fact, Nana said to me the other day, I feel like we've finally become all those women that we used to read about.
The old lady from the village.
With the lady from the village with the roll-down tights, like Mammy used to wear the roll-down stockings to her knees on a plastic chair, drinking fizzy pear cider. That's what happened to us last carnival. In fact, the day after this picture was taken was the first day I ever read The Colour Purple.
Oh, wow.
Those times, it felt like, I think we existed on a lot of magical thinking, but we felt very powerful. Like if you look at those pictures of us dancing and stuff, those are not girls who don't feel powerful, right?
No.
But simultaneously very vulnerable. There was so much growing up to do still, and we had no idea, really. We thought we were really pretty grown. That's when we used to walk really slowly.
Yes.
Because we were
kings.
Evoking the spirit of Africa.
Nice. Like, let's walk slowly down Grove.
What's the young really annoy people? Like, really, really annoy people.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'd like to talk about the night of my conception.
Do you?
Yes.
No, why?
Yes. Because actually, I used to just think, oh, yeah, fine. And now I'm like, hold up. Wait, what the fuck? conceived on the heath of Hampstead.
Oh my God, why are you making me talk about this?
Because it's how I was conceived.
Yeah,
it's
like, I know, but I don't necessarily want to chat to everyone about it.
No,
although
I'm just,
I have talked about it in interviews.
I'm just saying. We never really had that discussion.
No. Well, I mean, no.
So why not?
Why did I never sit you down and say,
let me just tell you about sex?
We were always talking about that stuff.
No, no. You and your mates were talking about sex, but you never really sat.
I did, but you got it mixed up. Don't you remember? There's this really brilliant story that Nick Weston's got of me, and I was like, I'd been explaining sex to you. You were explaining something I had taught you, and I said, and then you were saying the woman gives the man love or something, and I said, and what does the man give the woman? And you went, a fiver.
God, she's really got this wrong. What did I say to her?
It was really quite alarming.
Fiver.
Yeah, he was like, I was trying to get you to show off and go, look at my incredible little girl nose. And you were like, no. I think it was a continuous talk about the realities of life and living. I don't think I felt the need to sit down and have one allocated chat with you.
See, I think that you've always been very good at talking about life and living, but not that other thing.
What, sex?
Yeah.
To you?
Mm.
You think that's why you're such a prude?
Yes. You're just all hussies.
We're all hussies. No, I don't know. I think I didn't even up to this moment know that that was lacking.
Yeah, not lacking, sorry. But it's just, it's not even that. It's just... I don't know whether it's something that we find that easy to talk about, or love, romantic love.
Yeah.
What have you thought about my boyfriends over my life? It's not a great roll call, is it?
So it is interesting that I look at your romantic life and I'm like, bit dodgy, because I have a fairly checkered roll call as well, actually.
Up until your 30s?
Yeah, it was all a bit raggo, frankly. Do you know what I mean? Like really being very attracted to kind of quite broken people who I thought I could fix, who I was the one. So when you started to emulate that, I was quite worried. Interestingly, it's like there was a particular man that wasn't my dad that was in Nanny's life who I thought was just a waste man, yeah. And then one day I looked round and I realised that the guy that I was living with was essentially the same dude.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Shit.
I was like, I was doing the same thing, same way.
Off record.
Yeah.
Standard.
So, and interestingly, the men that I, like the good, really good boyfriends that I've had who really nurtured and loved me and cared for me and who were so important in my life are still really close to us all.
Yes.
Including to Garfield.
Yeah, and I thank the Lord that I have those male figures in my life. I got very lucky with that roll call. And then something kind of unexpected happens is that I connect back with my biological dad.
Yeah.
I guess that started a few years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. But the big thing, I suppose, this is my dad, Robin, who's Scottish and has two other children. But then I took the trip to Edinburgh for my granny Annie's 91st birthday party. And I think that was a bit different for you, me going to Scotland
see
them
all. Well, yeah, I mean, I was...
You said something interesting. You said, I've never had to share you with anyone.
Well, no, I hadn't. Not really. Not like... Because even though you've got all these, like, surrogate dads, because none of them were your blood father, I have always had kind of pole position. So it was totally weird to me. What is the right word to describe it? Unnerving. I found it a bit unnerving. Not bad. And I certainly wasn't against it, but I was not really
prepared
for it. Like when you went up to Scotland, I was like pacing around in here. And then I had to go up to the Waitrose and do unnecessary shopping.
Yeah.
And sit in the car park. And I was like, right, if anything happens, I'm going to get on the train. I'm going to go up there. And all this stuff was going through my head. And then I was like, you okay? And then you started sending me pictures of you and your dad's family. I was like, oh my God, she looks like them.
That was the biggest trip for all of us, all involved. Even my Scottish family were like, God, you really look like Granny. And I was like, I really do. And then I was like, well, she is my grandma. I mean, that was just such a crazy trip for me because our family are so, your family, this side of our family, whatever, yeah. however you want to put it, are just, there's so fucking many of us. There's so much going yeah. on. So the idea that there's this whole really quite big other family
Another
in
whole
Scotland,
wedge of people.
It was, it kind of makes you realise how much it takes to make just one person, at what goes into it.
Yeah.
The reason I was talking about the night of my conception is I wouldn't, this would just be a family up in Scotland that I'd never met unless you that day had made the few decisions that you made. That's what I mean about a day of conception.
Decisions
it's just like,
might be
decisions.
A bit of a stretch.
Yeah, sort of throwaway moments.
Yeah.
But, you know, my dad told me the story of that day, and I won't go into it, but it was a really beautiful...
Thank you very much.
But it was a really beautiful story. It was like, I saw you young and excited about the day.
And the world.
And the world, and it being warm and with a guy you fancied. And then you didn't know everything in your life was going to change because of that afternoon.
No.
And I just think that's very magical.
Did your dad ever told you that story that when we went to this pub just off Ladbroke Grove and there was a woman there? This was must had I was I pregnant with you? I don't know. I can't remember whether I was pregnant with you or it was before now. But it totally freaked us out. I was with your dad, well, your father, and then we went to, there's a funny pub there on the corner, and there was this like a kind of fortune teller, literally, I promise you. And she said, so whatever happens with you two, you'll be in each other's lives forever. And we both went, oh, God, so embarrassing. Just like sitting there like on a little date with some guy. And it was just like, oh, my God, can you shut up, please, fortune teller? And then she sort of went off. And then about, you know, a few months later, and I was pregnant with you, and Robin went, that woman.
That woman.
And I was like, oh, my God.
See, this is what's interesting to me. I didn't know that you were two people that liked each other that kind of dated a bit and went for a few drinks. I just thought it was just this one weekend or day. And that was really comforting to me to know that I came from two people who, like, were quite into each other or, like, vibed from each other.
Yeah, no, totally. Your dad came down from Scotland with Sean.
Yeah, my Uncle Sean, your brother.
Yeah.
How do you find it all now that my dad's in my life properly and I'm, you know, trying to go to Scotland as much as I can and I'm close, so close to my brother and sister now?
I think it's lovely for you. I think it's what you've always wanted. You've always wanted siblings for a start and now you have two. And I haven't met your lovely brother. He sounds so cute.
He's so sweet.
Your sister is a joy.
Yes.
And she's smart and she's funny and she looks like you. It's kind of weird. I look forward to meeting your brother. I think it's lovely for you. And I think that
for you,
it's given you a kind of rootedness. Well, for me, if you're happy, then I'm happy. It kind of works like that. It's not like I want arbitrary things for you. I just want you to be happy. And I want you to feel settled in yourself. And I want you to feel safe.
So how do you feel about me being 39 and not having a partner or having any kids at the moment?
I think that I'd rather you were single than with somebody that you settled for.
Correct.
I know so many people who just settle and will just stay with whoever just because it's the person that's in front of them and they can't be bothered to look further or want more for themselves. And I think you should want everything for yourself. You're right. You do deserve more. I know that you really want a baby and I'd love that for you.
Would you?
Yeah, of course, because that's what you want.
But what about you? Would you like to be a grandma?
I'd love to be a grandma. I think I'd be a great grandma. I want that for you because I know that's what you want. How do you feel about it though? Because it's quite a pressurized thing, I think.
What's crazy is how quickly that happens. One minute you're 32 and you're like, and then it's like, oh shit, it's like fucking, like, it's conundrum day. And so I've been reading a lot about people that have had babies in their mid-40s. And what I find so unfair about being a woman is that for me, being a mother in my 40s makes total sense to my bizarre life. And what I've had so far, my life has been about my career, especially the last 5 years. And I wouldn't have, I wasn't interested in a relationship or having a baby in the last 5 years. I wanted to take my career to new heights and get to a place of creation and stability and prosperity.
Yeah.
And I've got that now. Mm-hmm. And I'm riding this and I love it. But my 40s, I would love to be a mother throughout that time. I have to be honest, when I'm with my friends and their kids, the thing about people don't tell you is when you wait, and you're the last one or one of the last ones, you see everything. I know so much about being a parent from observation that it's not just like, oh, they had a baby, that's nice. Lily's kids are 11 and 12 now.
I know.
Phoebe's are like 9 and 10.
Yeah, they're big people.
Big people. So if I could easily just like have babies at 43, I'd be like, oh, this is so good. Life's going exactly how I want it to. But that might not be the case. I do understand this fucking ticking clock that people have talked about. Mm. I think there's also a part of me that has never wanted to do it because nothing seems like it hasn't gone the right way. That's right. There's no regrets in any way.
Made all the right decisions for yourself.
Definitely. And I saw people when I was younger have kids with just some guy, like just some really, there's idiot. So much else to do in this world. So many other things to do in this world. But I would love to be a mother now that I'm turning 40 this year.
Are you still thinking about getting your eggs frozen?
Yes, but regardless of getting them frozen, I'm just going to look into it. Instead of sitting here panicking, I'm going to be, I have another friend who's 38 or 37 who wants to look into it too.
Yeah.
We were like, let's be students. Let's get rucksacks, get our thinking brains
on. Get the right
on.
Outfit on, get the right outfit. It's you, yeah.
Like I want to do like sort of college 96. Might get an Eastpak rucksack.
Sister Act 2.
Sister Act 2. We got to wear some Timberlands. Bit hair, bit up, bit down. I'll be Lauren Hill. But I want to be a student and be curious, not worried. And that's what you've always said to me. And we do that with each other. We've said whenever you're like, I'm worried about this, change that word to curious.
Change the language.
And I just want to be a student.
Yeah.
I would be devastated if I didn't have a kid in my life.
You never had a child.
I would be. I think I'd be a good mum and I really want to be a good mum.
Also, you've got lots of babies sitting around.
Yeah, aren't you too busy to help? Garfield's going to help me raise this kid, let's be honest. Let's be honest.
I'll take it with me. It's what you did. I just strapped you on and got on with it.
Okay. This food, mum.
Does it make you happy?
It makes me so happy.
That's a damn good meatloaf.
It's so nice.
It's very moist.
Because also, yes, it's not. I think people think it's like a dry hunk of meatloaf.
No, it's like you spice it right, season it up, loads of onion, loads of garlic.
So there's spices.
I've used our all-purpose seasoning that me and Randell make.
Mm.
It's good though. Food in our relationship is an interesting one, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
It's quite complex, I think.
Yes.
Because you grew up with a mum with an eating disorder as well.
Yes.
So navigating that was hard for you.
I think that, unfortunately, there was this time where food was joy and everything and the kind of heart of our lives and our community and our family. And then when Sean passed away,
it all went weird.
It rapidly got into a place of hiding and then just so much shame. And I hated seeing...
And painful.
Painful.
It was really painful.
But now that I read, sorry, it's terrible I have to read interviews with you to know this, but when you've talked about this recently, I kind of really got in your head and your shoes and just thought, where were you meant to turn?
Put all that stuff.
Where were you meant to put all that pain?
It's interesting because I feel like food as a medicine has knitted our lives together. Like really all those dinners, all those lunches, all those Christmases, Waifs and Strays Christmas, all that stuff that we talk about that we always used to have. That was me. You know, I mentioned it earlier, you know, Nana and I were trying to create family and community around ourselves. And that was me doing that in our house, in our home, you know, drawing people, not thinking even about it like that, but I just was like, come. You know, like Mutale, our friend, he lives in New York. He did an interview about something and he was talking about our house back in the day. And he was going, you know, and then I would go to Andy's and it was like a heart, like a magnet, like a stopping place for him. He could be there. It smelt right. The food smelt right. The people smelt right. Mm-hmm. Everything smelt right. And he could just be there. And, you know, there's like Zoe and Mutale. And
that's
and
what,
Nana
but that's what Lily said in her book as well. Yeah. God, isn't it funny that food's become your greatest success?
I know.
It is crazy, though.
It's crazy, but then also not. It's really like, well, it's been the kind of defining factor of my life in so many ways, for the good and for the bad, for the joy and for the sad.
And that's what we were saying, actually, earlier. It's like, look at all those monsters, and you don't go, it was the food. It was like, what did I do with all those times?
Yeah.
And food was... so many different things. It wasn't always just one thing.
When I think about it now, I was so young when I was 20. You know, I was quite a young 20 in many ways.
Wow.
But then also I've been through quite a lot already. So I was young, underdeveloped in some ways and perhaps overdeveloped in other ways. Like, you know, like I was really hypervigilant about everything and been through all this weird stuff in Suffolk. And then next thing I knew, you know, I left home when I was 16. So it was only a couple of years, 4 years. And then I was pregnant, you know. And people always go, oh, you had a baby. That must have been so hard, so hard. And I'm like, some bits, perhaps. But I think there are pros and cons for both. You know, when you have a baby when you're really young, you literally, you only need a couple of hours sleep anyway. It's not even a big deal. You just strap them on. That's what I did. We just strapped you all on and cracked on with it. You'd, you know, do a gig. Somebody would be at the side of the stage. Can you hold the baby? I was going to go and do a quick gig. You do a quick gig, come back off, pick up the baby, go home. That's how it worked. You were in a Moses basket. I've told you this before. In a Moses basket, asleep. We did a night for several years that was banging. And then the last one we ever had, I'd had you. And I was like, well, I'm not going to not go. So I just took you with me into Soho and we just tucked you under the till.
Soho?
But it fit perfectly on the shelf under the till and you just stepped through the whole thing. Then I took you home, you were fine. There are things about being young, because you don't know any better when you were young, but so you're a bit fearless about things and you kind of just charge or forge ahead with your baby. And then I remember one day somebody said to me, you know that time in your 20s and you've got no responsibilities and you can do what you want and did, and I was like, no.
Yeah,
what are you talking about? And I was like, oh no, because I had a kid. So I, you know what I mean? It's like I realised there were things that I probably missed, but I think there was so much that I gained as well. And when I talk to people who have babies older, like when they're your age, maybe a bit older, maybe slightly younger, all of that, you know, it's very difficult for them to adapt to not having to suddenly having to think about somebody else all the time, to not having the sleep. You know, a good couple of my very close friends found the sleep bit really, really hard because they were older.
Yeah.
You know, when you're 20, you don't need any sleep. You've got more loads of blood rushing around your body.
And also, I suppose when you get older, your life looks a certain way and has for longer.
Yeah,
so it's exactly. More of a disruption.
Exactly. It's a lot of disruption. It's a big change.
But I think one of the reasons that I haven't, just one of the many reasons that I haven't had a baby yet is because I know what you went through. I know what it was like. And I don't think I could do that. I think I would be terrified to look down at a baby and feel like I didn't have enough money or stability or...
I didn't have time to be terrified.
Do you know what, actually? I had a bit of a eureka moment about me and you the other day.
And you know how you always say to me, oh, I can't, you don't let me be worried about anything because you get really annoyed and, you know, all of that stuff. And I thought, you know what it is? Is that I just didn't have time to be...
You didn't have the luxury of panic.
Of anxiety. I'm talking about my anxiety. Just had to get on with it. So I get very much like, can you just get on with it? It's not because I don't think you should feel the things you feel or think the things you think. But I think I just used to feel them and think them and then have to crack on. So sometimes I am not as understanding perhaps as I could be.
Yeah, but now I understand why.
Yeah. But I only worked that out like about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. I've had the time to luxuriate in my own anxiety because it's always just been me.
If you want to call it that, luxuriate. You know, there's space for it. I didn't have space for that stuff. I had a baby to raise and, you know, money to get and
to
do, music to make, people to meet, crack on. It was a bit like that. Just get on with it. Well, but I think my generation is very getty on with it.
What were you thinking about turning 40?
It didn't feel like a scary thing. It didn't feel like a sort of, ooh, 40 thing. I just was like, oh, I'm going to have a party. Was
really?
My main. Yeah.
You're so crazy.
Why?
Did you not get any feelings about midlife?
No.
Mortality?
No. I've never really cared about that age thing.
I know you haven't.
It's never really been an issue to me. And, you know, when you're really young and you say that, people go, oh, that's really interesting. When you say it when you're this age, people go, yeah, right. But I just have never thought about that stuff. Maybe it's like losing Sean so early and all of that kind of stuff. Every year feels like a gift.
Mm-hmm.
It's, oh my God, I'm still alive. That's genuine. You know, on my birthday, I always at some point think I'm still alive.
That's a good thing though, right?
I know, I just can't believe
it. So I'm grateful to be alive and I'm grateful to still be here and I was grateful then and I'm grateful now. I just think like we literally spend too much time sitting about whinging and moaning about what we haven't got and what you want next. It's like, what about now? Look at Alison, Nanny McPhee the other day, you know? She knows when she's going to die. She's got her death date. She's got herself organised and sorted it out.
Mm-hmm.
The things that she was saying that were important to her was so resonated with me, you know, just like time on the sofa with the people you love, going for a little walk, you know, just the loving detail of everyday life.
Yes.
It's like we just must never forget that stuff because, you know, one day you won't have tomorrow.
So what advice would you give me in the year that I'm turning 40?
Live each moment, enjoy every second of it, be grateful for every breath that you take because one day that'll be your last one.
So how do you feel about, like, for instance, where we're at in our lives right now? I was just saying to T as I walked up the street, like, you know, this is all still relatively new, having a home of this size, having a garden, having stairs, having the space for Nanny to leave Suffolk and come live with you.
Yeah.
How do you feel you're doing?
I'm doing great. Like I said at that thing, someone said, how do you feel? I said, like a rocket ship. And I do feel like on fire somewhat. I do feel ready for anything and ready for action and ready to do more things that I love. I want to write another book. I want to travel more. I want to, like, that trip we just all took together was incredible, like magical, going to Kenya with you and Garfield as a family and being able to, like, buy the plane tickets and, you know, book us in where we wanted to be. Like, having a empowerment in my life, like having agency is so important. And that feels like amazing at this point in my life. You're suddenly on the cover of Good Housekeeping, which is such a kind of Middle England place to be. It's not somewhere I ever imagined myself. Do you know what I mean?
Right,
it's
like, yeah, that makes sense.
I think I imagine myself in arenas of success in many different ways because I've never felt like less than or anything like that. But I never really thought of myself with this kind of ubiquity and like being able to different people from so many areas of our society being able to relate to me and having this. Lem Sisse, when he's here, talked about me having a conversation with the country.
I loved that.
And I thought that was such a lovely thing when he said it like that. And I thought, that's how I feel. And of course, he got it right because he's a master of language. But
she chatty, she cookie.
She bookie.
Chatty, she cookie, she bookie. It's so good. It will just keep going, right?
Lyrics Dread will like it.
And when was the time that you liked me least?
Interesting question. So many.
Just looking for one? Just one answer.
Just the one answer, contestant. When did I like you least? Well, that time you spat in my face. That was pretty bad.
Oh,
and I had to go outside and call Sandra because I wanted to actually kill you. I was so upset.
It's crazy, isn't it? Because some of those fights we had when we were in the past,
you were going to say when we were kids.
When we were kids, yeah.
When you were a kid.
But you were a kid too. 22, you would have been or something.
No, 26. I was an adult human being. I was 30 years old when you were 10.
All right. So, when I was a kid,
was
these times where I would look at you and I was just like, I have never been so angry with anyone in my life, and I never will be, to the point where I wanted to like do some harm to myself so that you would understand, you know,
the height, depth of your frustration.
Of my agony and frustration and pain. And I just wanted to know what you thought about that because, you know, maybe it's more heightened because of a single parent. And so it's just me and you bouncing around this house.
Yeah.
Just like, I want to kill you. And no one has ever misunderstood me so much, blah, blah, blah.
Well,
I mean, but it's interesting to look at someone you love so much and hate them in that moment and just, it's scary.
I remember being a teenager and thinking, I'm never going to, and look like looking at cliches of teenagers. I'm going, nobody understands me. I'm thinking, God, what an idiotic cliche. And then one day, lying upstairs in my bedroom, thrashing around, going, nobody understands me, and catching myself doing it and thinking, oh, I am that teenage cliche. It's just part of growing up, that moment where you feel like no one understands you. It's hormonal. Your brain's growing. There's shit happening.
I felt like it in Kenya on one day.
Yeah, well, that's because, you know, the bratometer went up quite high.
I'm still growing. I don't know.
Sometimes you are still a bit of a teenager, even though you're 39 years old. Sometimes you do regress to that place when you're with me or with Garfield. Sometimes that's how you start behaving. And it's always, it's a bit confusing at this point, obviously, because you're
all right,
not a teenager. So I get like, what's going on?
Is it crazy to watch your child get older?
Yes. When you get suddenly wise with me, I go, oh.
Oh, yeah, when I wise you.
When you wise me, I find that really disconcerting. But I like it. It's just new. You know, the other day, like being with you and with Lil on that trip, and with Jessie, actually, all three of you, Jessie and Lily being your two of your oldest, like, lifetime friends, obviously. Mm-hmm. Being with all three of you and then having these conversations with all of you together and individually, I was like, you know, we did good. These kids are good people. These are good grown people, and they are the kind of grown people I would want to be around if I was their age. You know what I mean? It's like, you're good people. You know, nothing has come easily, but what has come is a beautiful thing.
Mum.
Your kids are good.
What are the things that I do now in my life that make you feel proud?
Oh, you're an incredibly kind person. To all your friends, like the time you give your friends and the thought that you give to them and how they're going to feel is a really beautiful thing. I'm really proud of your resilience. I'm really proud of how you took your life back when you lost so much and you literally lay down for a couple of months and went right and have literally just one foot in front of the other, pulled yourself back up to your full height. And that is a thing of beauty. And I love that.
You crying.
And that makes me really, really proud of you. And watching you do your job. You know, one of the things I love about working with you is watching you work, because you're really good at what you do. You're so good at it. Like when we're doing this podcast, sometimes I'm a bit tired and you just take the reins and you know your shit and you're so excellent at your job.
Oh, Mum, that means so much to me.
And when you're proud of me, do me, do me. Do me now.
I think what I love seeing is how much of who you are and what you've been through you share with other people, even the really upsetting, most tragic things that have happened in your life and the things that have broken you down. I know that you know you're here to share that with people so that they can heal from their own shit. I mean, watching you take the book around the country and just keep, and the way people look at you, it's so deserved and it's so like it was always going to happen, but we never knew. Like, I don't know, I love how much love you can give to others and I like watching it bounce back to you because you deserve it so much. And also the way I know where I learned my work ethic, like you just don't stop. You just don't stop. No. You just wake up and you do the best job every single time that you're on any set or anything. As you've always taught me, like, if you're there, you do it 100% or more.
And treat people right.
And treat people right. And you just give so much to everyone around you. And look how much there is to give now. You always have, even when we had nothing. That always used to make me very proud, how much you share and give, even when you don't have much.
Thank you, darling.
And that's what your career's turned into.
Weird, huh?
What a life! This is living.
This is living. Can we have a cheers?
To what?
To us.
To us?
Yeah.
Okay.
Come on, to us.
To us.
To us.
Who knows what's next?
Wait a minute.
Who knows what's next?
No, you can't.
Okay, clap team.
Thank you so much. Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.